We're listening to the music of John Cage. This is called The Solo for Piano with Bassoon, performed by Paolo Carlini and Mauro Castellano. And that's it for Listen Adventurously for this morning. Thanks for listening in. 8 o'clock Buzz is coming up with Brian Standing and BBC News as well. This is WORT-FM Madison.
Hello, I'm David Harper with the BBC News. Palestinian medics say they are retrieving dozens of bodies from the ruins of Gaza's biggest hospital, Al-Shifa, after Israeli forces pulled out at the end of an intense two-week operation. The Israeli military says it killed and detained hundreds of gunmen. Yolande Nell reports.
Footage shows piles of rubble and burnt-out buildings where Gaza's largest hospital once stood, with Palestinian bodies left lying in the dirt. Hundreds of locals have returned to check on the damage to surrounding neighbourhoods, with large areas razed in the fierce battles between Israel and Palestinian gunmen. The Israeli military says it seized senior Hamas figures, as well as weapons and intelligence documents, in its surprise raid at the hospital, the second of the war. While it sees this operation as having dealt a major blow to its enemy, some Israeli commentators said it was also a worrying sign of the ability of Hamas to regroup in places that had previously been conquered and underscored the need for a convincing post-war strategy.
The Kremlin has dismissed a media report that links a Russian intelligence unit to Havana syndrome, a mystery illness which has affected US diplomats. An investigation by The Insider, Der Spiegel and CBS alleges that the Americans were targeted with directed energy weapons. Here's Rachel Wright.
US officials suggested that those affected could have been hit by microwaves from hidden devices, but they said it was unlikely a foreign power was to blame. Now evidence has emerged suggesting that operatives from a Russian military intelligence unit may have targeted the brains of US diplomats with directed energy weapons. The report said the evidence placed members of the unit in cities around the world at times when American personnel reported feeling unwell. But the Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said the accusation were baseless and unfounded.
Police in South Korea are seeking to arrest two men for allegedly being part of a plot to install spy cameras in voting booths ahead of this month's parliamentary elections. The men are accused of working with a social media influencer who's already been detained after the discovery of secret recording devices in 40 locations. Pakistani officials have made at least 12 arrests in connection with a car bombing last week that killed six people, including five Chinese engineers. The authorities said among those detained was the main facilitator of the attack. Ambarasan Etirajan reports.
The Chinese engineers and their Pakistani driver were returning from Islamabad to a hydropower project when an explosives-laden vehicle rammed into their van. A Chinese company is involved in the construction of the dam in Dasu. It's not clear who carried out the attack, but officials suspect the Pakistani Taliban could be to blame. The Chinese firm has suspended all construction work in three hydropower projects in the region. Beijing has also demanded adequate security for about 1,200 of its workers involved in the projects.
World News from the BBC.
Hey! What are you trying to do? You ruined my record, man! I just bought it!
Did you realize this year's Record Store Day is April 20th, also known as 420? We here at WORT are certainly aware, and as a matter of fact, we're throwing a party at the Crystal Corner Bar with two great local bands, Iftikhar and the Earthlings, supplemented by sets from WORT DJs, Julia McAnley from Her Infinite Variety, Brian Hirsch from Green Morning Radio, and New Phone Rick of XL290 Live Music Radio Hour. So we'll see you at the Crystal Corner, Saturday, April 20th, for our Record Store Day and 420 celebration with Iftikhar, the Earthlings, and WORT DJs.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Budget Bicycle Center's used bicycle showroom located at 930 Regent Street. Open for curbside service estimates and sales, 251-1663. More information on Budget Bicycles services for new and used bicycles is available on the web at budget.com. budgetbicycleCTR.com.
Good morning. It is 8:06 and you're tuned to the Monday 8 o'clock buzz on WORT 89.9 FM. My name is Brian Standing and you are listening to the premier voyage of the WORT's new soundboards. We have the privilege, or perhaps the risk, the gamble, as it were, of testing these things out live on the air for the very first time. So a great shout out to our entire technical crew and everybody who worked very long hours to try and get these things installed. It also coincides with a very lovely remodel of our middle studio where I'm broadcasting to you from right now. We've got news coordinator, news director Charlie Pittman out on the board right now, running this thing through its paces. Charlie, thanks so much for letting us be the guinea pig and for taking the helm here.
Hey, it wasn't my decision, so I'll also say I'm making a list of all the things that aren't working.
Yeah, okay. So if you out there on Radio Land hear anything weird, please let us know so that we can debug it. But hey, just because we're testing out some brand new tech here on WRT doesn't mean we don't also have a great show for you. We have coming up on the program, Madison's long-running youth job skills program, Operation Fresh Start, gets a new executive director. We'll talk with the newly appointed Brian McMahon. And another conservative astroturf group seeks to roll back conservation efforts in Wisconsin. Charles Carlin of Gathering Waters joins us to sound the alarm about American stewards of liberty. And textiles, how they're made and what they're trying to say is on the minds of three UW art students sharing exhibit space at the School of Human Ecology. We'll talk with artists Heather Kohlmeyer, Veronica Y. Pham, and Esther Cho. All that's coming up on the program along with some announcements, the Outdoor Adventure Report, and some tasty tunes served up by our engineer today, Charlie Pittman. All that's coming up right after this. It's 8:10. You're tuned to the 8 o'clock buzz on WORT. This is Brian Standing. Well, Operation Fresh Start began in Madison in 1970 as the brainchild of juvenile counselor Jack Osteris. The program sought to provide Madison area youth with practical job experience and skills while rehabbing older houses in the community. 54 years later, Operation Fresh Start has expanded to provide construction and conservation teams throughout Dane County and has inspired similar programs around the country. In February, Operation Fresh Start announced the hiring of Brian McMahon as their new executive director after the retirement of 13-year veteran director Greg Markle. Brian McMahon joins us now in the studio. Welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz.
Hey, absolutely. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me here talking about OFS.
Yeah, so you worked in an assistant capacity or an assistant director capacity for some time, so you're no stranger to this program.
No, yeah, I was in the deputy director role for the last 13 years. I actually just celebrated my 25th anniversary this year at OFS, so I started as a construction crew supervisor, was later our career placement coordinator, and then the program director, deputy director role.
So some continuity.
Yes, really. Yes. I've had a series of progressive roles that have prepared me for this next role. And I've really benefited from being under the leadership of two highly effective executive directors, Connie Ferris Bailey, the previous executive director, who was ED for 30-plus years, I think 34 years, and then Greg Markle, as you mentioned, the last 13. So I've really benefited from being able to get knowledge as long, you know, in addition to other staff, there, you know, a lot of knowledge and leadership being poured into me.
So let's, for people who may not be familiar with Operation Fresh Start, what are some of the things that you do, and who, first off, who makes up the staff who work on the projects, and what kind of projects do you do?
Yeah, you know, and I'll start with our mission, just to kind of lay that out there. You know, so our mission in Operation Fresh Start is to empower emerging adults on a path to self-sufficiency through education, mentoring, and employment training. And our vision is that all emerging adults ages 16 to 24 are assets in our community. And As you kind of talked about, we're a multi-agency organization, so we offer 9 different programs to help move emerging adults forward in our community. And we do that in a variety of ways. Some of the work platforms we engage in is, as you talked about, you know, construction and conservation. So our young people are out there building affordable housing for Madison, doing some pretty significant conservation and land stewardship work in those areas, earning pre-apprenticeship certifications in carpentry and conservation, urban forestry, you know, as well as other work platforms. So our staff are multi-talented people from across the spectrum. You know, we have state certified teachers. You know, really where we work in those, all of our programs work at that intersection of education, workforce development training, and positive youth development. So it's a bunch of counselors, teachers, mentors, coaches, and crafts master trades people.
And what are the age ranges of the folks that you work with?
The young people. We work with young people ages 16 to 24.
And so tell us, what are some of the emerging things that Operation Fresh Start is getting into? I mean, you added a conservation team a number of years back, and you've done a lot of work on sort of housing rehabilitation. Are there new areas that Operation Fresh Start is looking to get into?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a really exciting time for Operation Fresh Start. So we have a new board president, a new executive director. We're currently in the last year of our 5-year strategic plan. So the timing for a 360-degree assessment is ideal. And over the next 12 to 18 months, we'll be going through that planning process, so engaging with staff, our board of directors, our participants, and community stakeholders to kind of shape the vision for the next 5 years. You know, certainly, you know, I envision some things. Over our 54-year history, Fresh Start has really established itself as one of the foremost emerging adult training programs in the country. You know, and as you mentioned, you know, we've added a lot of relevant programs for emerging adults in our communities. I think now we need to strengthen our resource support and partnerships around mental health, housing, transportation, and childcare. You know, I also envision, you know, going forward, continuing to expand upon those advanced training programs, our Build Academy which is advanced construction training that leads to families sustaining careers in the trades, conservation, natural resource management. Career Point is one of our newest programs, and that's really targeted to work with other industries in our community and top-tier employers to develop bridges into career track employment opportunities in such areas as, like the financial services sector. We just completed our first cohort with UW Credit Union to help young people bridge into, banking and financial services, healthcare. I think there's a lot, given the strong medical community here, and the labor needs there, advanced healthcare training opportunities, customer service, early childhood development, biotech. These are all industries we can target to help our young people get into whatever it is that they want to get into.
That's a pretty ambitious expansion. I mean, talking from starting out where you're working, really focusing on sort of construction kinds of work and branching out into a lot of white collar sort of types of work as well. How do you staff an operation like that to make sure that you have people available to train in all of those diverse fields?
Through partnerships. So yes, you're right. We've developed some really successful tracks in construction and conservation. A lot of our young people come to OFS. They're those hands-on tactile learners. They learn by seeing and doing and love it, want to go into the trades, into natural resource management. But there's a number that don't. they want to enter, as you kind of said, maybe those more white-collar. So, our staff works with these partnerships. These are things that we're not going to replicate. We have the expertise in-house around conservation and construction, but it's through these partnerships where we're engaging with our employer partners in the community to really hear what are those entry-level things that you need to see from new employees coming in, and that's what our staff can focus on. We're not going to replicate, that healthcare setting or that lab or, the customer service, but we can train in some of those fundamental things and then through that partnership offer this paid, work experience training to help bridge them. Where we're building half the bridge and then employers building the second half, and we're walking that young person into that career opportunity through partnerships. That's how we develop it. We won't look to bring that expertise in-house. The expertise is in our community. We'll just partner in that way. One area that I do see us potentially getting into is climate mitigation. That obviously is one of our society's greatest challenges, and that's been kind of a foundational aspect of our community, and our young people contribute to some of our community's greatest challenges, housing, affordable housing, natural resource management, and climate challenges are not lost on the young people we serve. They recognize this challenge, they want to contribute, and many want to pursue a career in this growing green industry. And that's in some ways kind of a marriage of our construction and conservation work platforms, and I could see us engaging in providing a new work platform training around solar panel installation, weatherization, insulation, flood mitigation type work.
So how many youth do you serve at a time, and how do people find out about your program, and how are they selected for it? Is there a waiting list? Is it a competitive sort of process?
Yeah. Through the nine programs we offer, last year I believe we served upwards of 400 young adults in our community. Each have, if you're a young person out there looking to find that kind of that path forward in your career in post-secondary, please go to our website, operationfreshstart.org, and you can apply online. Or if you know a young person that would be in need of our services, please refer them to us. But they can go online and, fill out an interest form, and our staff will reach out and contact them. Different programs have different onboarding processes, but our staff will be reaching out immediately to connect and walk that young adult through that process to get in.
And how are you funded?
We have multiple funding sources, everything from federal, state, local, and financial, local supporters and donors.
So you're nonprofit and it's just community funded, basically?
Yeah, nonprofit. So we have federal funding. So we're a youth build organization, AmeriCorps, Department of Labor are some of the federal level. Our state, we're a WIOA, Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act organization. So there's multiple federal, state, local through our partnerships with the City of Madison, MMSD. Those are some of our big, important local partners, too.
So as the new executive director, what are some of your priorities coming up?
You know, I want, first and foremost, is to provide a stable transition as we move forward. But, we have an amazing, talented, and dedicated staff, a great board of directors. Greg Markle, the previous executive, as a new ED, I couldn't ask for a better situation. Fresh Start is in a really good place. Stable transition. And then, I'm really excited to begin the work of building our next five-year strategic plan. So engaging with community stakeholders and partners on, identifying some of those needs and gaps out there for the young people in our community. I am excited to build new relationships and deliver on new ambitions to come. Fresh Start is a well-deserved national reputation. We'll continue to help our trainees one by one. We'll remain a place to try new and innovative initiatives and projects that can be replicated elsewhere throughout our state and country.
All right. We've been speaking with newly appointed Executive Director of Operation Fresh Start, Brian McMahon. Thanks so much for joining us on the 8 o'clock buzz.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back with the Outdoor Adventure Report and the Song of the Week coming up right after this. It's 8:24. You're tuned to the 8 o'clock buzz on WORT. This is Brian Standing. It's time, as we do each and every week, for a quick look at the things happening out in the great outdoors with the Outdoor Adventure Report. Here's master naturalist Paul Noldner. Take it away, Paul.
Thank you, master radio host Brian and WORT, for covering all things natural. Happy Easter Bunny weekend. And good morning, Madison nature lovers. Birdwatching is our nation's biggest participatory sport, and anyone can enjoy nature recreation in a variety of forms. Your weekly outdoor adventure report is brought to you by Madison Fund, Friends of Urban Nature, a partnership of local parks, environmental, and Friends of Parks groups, helping connect our Madison communities and kids with nature everywhere, all year round. Enjoy free, fun, welcoming, diverse, fairly accessible, usually on fairly easy trails and level, family and kid-friendly, naturalist-guided, educational bird and nature adventures every week year-round, along with many other great outings and events in Madison parks and natural areas hosted by local nature groups. Outings are free with no registration unless noted. No special equipment is needed to enjoy the outdoors. Just show up and join the fun. This past week, birders were excited to report common loons on Madison lakes. We are also hearing the joyful cacophony spring calls of red-winged blackbirds returning to their traditional marsh cattail habitats in small urban wetland areas throughout the city. The song can be so loud one could almost call it marsh madness. These highly adaptable blackbirds with red and yellow wing patches have also adapted to foraging during migration in urban backyards and bird feeders that have replaced many of Madison's historic marshes over time, but they cannot nest there. We need to save and restore our urban wetlands that remain throughout the city. Even small ones are important. Other well-loved Wisconsin birds in the blackbird family, Icteridae, include sweet-singing meadowlarks with a bold Superman V on their yellow chest, bright orange and black orioles that build the sock nests we see hanging from trees, and dramatic-looking yellow-headed blackbirds whose weird calls sound like the creature coming out of Sigourney Weaver's chest in the film Alien. Coming up this week, there are lots of opportunities to enjoy and learn about nature and the loons, blackbirds, and other amazing birds that return to Madison every year in spring. Bird watchers of any skill level are invited to join popular guide Chuck Henriksen Tuesday, April 2, and every Tuesday morning at 7:15 a.m. at the Arboretum Visitor Center parking lot. You can email chenriksen, H-E-N-R-I-K-S-O-N, at gmail.com to get his colorful weekly reports. Madison Parks is updating its park and open space plan and seeking input from area residents. The first open house drop-in session is this Thursday, April 4, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Vell Phillips Memorial High School on Gammon Road in the Wisconsin Community Room. Participants may stop by any time during the two-hour event on Thursday, April 4, 5:30 to 7 at Vell Phillips Memorial High School. We can join Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance on Thursday, April 4, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Cherokee Marsh to hear the evening sounds of whatever species we may find. Visit the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance website for more information and to register for this and other fun birding events. UW students are invited to join UW Student Audubon on a bird outing Saturday morning, April 6th, and every Saturday morning by emailing audubonsocietyuw@gmail.com to connect up. Learn about the fascinating world of birds and migration magic on a free, fun, family-friendly bird and nature adventure Saturday, April 6th, 2:30 p.m. at Tenney Park Beach with myself, Paul Neldner, taking you for a walk in the Tenney Park urban natural areas that provide critical rest stops for birds heading north and summer nesting spots for many species. We'll listen for robins chirping in the trees, cardinals singing territorial songs, and geese resting on the water and hawking in bees overhead. How far do they go south for the winter with no plane ticket? How did they find their way back with no GPS? We will learn to use the Merlin app to identify birds by sight and sound and enter sightings on eBird. You can enjoy a free educational naturalist guided arboretum nature walk on Sunday, April 7 at 1 p.m. and every Sunday meeting at the Visitor Center. Learn how to be a forager steward on a free bird and nature adventure on Sunday afternoon, April 7, meeting 1:30 p.m. at Cherokee Marsh North Unit. Naturalist Kathleen Wolf will take you on a free, family-friendly nature hike to look for the amazing variety of natural sources of food, micronutrients, medicine, and other uses. Learn about their importance to wildlife and to people over history, how to do responsible human foraging where permitted, and ways to grow your own. Please note that foraging is not permitted in our conservation parks. Mark your calendar for the free annual Earth Week Madison Fun Bird and Nature Festival, Sunday afternoon, April 28th at Warner Park at the Rainbow Shelter area. Come anytime, noon to 4, for the ongoing live raptor show, fun family-friendly nature exhibits, kids' activities, face painting, kites, food carts, music, and more, hosted by Madison Parks and your local nature groups. More adventures coming up in April include a senior adventure on April 11th, Nature Up Close, a pasture prairie walk, looking for ephemerals, helping with creek cleanup during Earth Week cleanups, finding spring ephemerals, looking for a frog, songs of spring, and a wildflower walk. You can find the details at cityofmadison.com parks and online at tinyurl.com/MadisonFunAdventures. Check out Facebook and Nextdoor for Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance, Four Lakes Sierra, BIPOC,
Feminist Bird Club, Get Kids Outside, Friends of the Turkey Marsh, and other Madison environmental community and friends groups helping preserve and restore our urban parks and natural areas for other living things and creating opportunities for us to enjoy nature everywhere, up close, right here in Madison. It's naturally fun.
Now it's time, as we also do each and every week, for the Song of the Week. And Shally Pittman, what's rattling around your musical brain today?
Well, because you mentioned the new airwaves, when the airwaves swing, distant voices sing. So to celebrate all the folks who spent their entire weekend here at WORT, we have a song from Kraftwerk, and it's called Airwaves. You ready?
I'm ready.
Wenn Wellen schwingen, ferne Stimmen singen. Wenn Wellen schwingen, ferne Stimmen singen.
In addition to the generous support of listener sponsors, the local businesses and organizations that underwrite WORT's programming play a vital role in the financial health of your community radio station. WORT is grateful for the support of our underwriters, and when you visit these businesses and organizations, please let them know that their support of WORT is appreciated. For information on how to become a WORT underwriter, contact me, Doug Holtz, at 608-256-2001 or visit our website at wortfm.org.
Hi, I'm Mel from The Mel and Floyd Show. Come on down and join Floyd and me Friday, April 5th from 1 to 2 for our annual Wisconsin Film Festival live show. This year we'll be broadcasting from the Bartell Theater, 116 East Mifflin Street. We'll be interviewing our usual assortment of interesting people from the fest, including directors, actors, writers, people from the craft services table, and if we have some time to fill, maybe some interesting-looking passersby. We'll cover raging film controversies such as popcorn, butter or no butter, seating, center or aisle, and how to properly shush a loud patron. Heady stuff? It certainly is. Yes, it's going to be quite the wild ride indeed. So let's all go to the lobby. Come join the fun with Mel and Floyd at the Bartell Theater Friday, April 5th from 1 to 2 for our annual Wisconsin Film Festival remote broadcast.
It's 8:34. You're tuned to the 8 o'clock buzz on WORT. This is Brian Standing. In January, the 8 o'clock buzz brought you the story of Governor Evers' surprise sidestep around the obstructionist GOP-controlled Wisconsin legislature by using federal funds to acquire conservation easements along the Pelican River. The governor's action brought to an end a years-long battle to protect 55,000 acres of forest, recreation, and conservation land in Oneida County. Now, a recent investigatory report from the Wisconsin Examiner reveals that a Texas-based anti-conservation group spearheaded much of the ostensibly local opposition to the land purchase. Charles Carlin is the Strategic Initiatives Director of Gathering Waters, a statewide consortium of Wisconsin Land Trust, and he joins us now with a story. Welcome back to the 8 o'clock Buzz, Charles.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. So who is this group, American Stewards of Liberty?
So the American Stewards of Liberty are a Texas-based extremist anti-conservation group. Their shtick is to travel the country and try and get county boards, especially, to pass resolutions opposing conservation efforts. So these are things like resolutions to oppose President Biden's America the Beautiful initiative, which seeks to protect 30% of land and water by 2030. Or they work with county governments to invoke a so-called power of coordination, which is a kind of hocus pocus where counties say that they can just veto the land use decisions of private property owners, states, or the federal government. There's no substance to it, but they make a bunch of money in consulting fees, and they really mislead local government officials as to what their powers are to determine land use decisions.
So the idea of being anti-conservation just seems almost, it seems like a non sequitur in some ways. Are these actually grassroots groups, or is there some group, something behind that that's supporting this sort of operation?
This is not a grassroots effort by any means. The executive director of American Stewards of Liberty is a woman by the name of Margaret Byfield. Her father, a gentleman by the name of Wayne Hagee, was one of the initial progenitors of what we call the Sagebrush Rebellion, which during the Ronald Reagan era was this sort of right-wing backlash against land conservation efforts that really came out of this outrageous sense of entitlement that people think they should be able to use federal lands however they wanted. So Margaret's father, Wayne, he refused to pay grazing fees for 20 years running his cattle on federal land. And they somehow thought that they were entitled to just use federal land as they wanted, as if it was their own. They lost that fight. Ultimately, they had to pay more than $500,000 in grazing fees. But it really kind of sparked this movement where they say that public land should be used for extractive industry. That extraction might be cattle, but more often that's oil and that's gas and that's mining. And we see that a lot of that oil and gas money is what drives American Stewards of Liberty.
And so talk about how they got involved in Oneida County. What did that campaign look like, and how many people were sort of taken in by this?
So as the campaign to protect the Pelican River Forest moved forward, and you know, just as a quick reminder, Pelican River Forest was it's the largest conservation effort in modern Wisconsin history. So we've got more than 70,000 acres of working forest protected for all of Wisconsin forever now. Our Wisconsin congressperson, Tom Tiffany, really tried to sabotage the project at the last minute. He sought to block the federal funding, and he invited the American Stewards of Liberty to come to Wisconsin and to work with a handful of county board members to try and block that funding at the last minute. Now, to be clear, this wasn't even a majority of county board members. It wasn't an official action by county boards. Really, Tiffany, the American Stewards of Liberty, and a handful of individual county board members sought to intervene and block that federal funding through this bogus idea of coordination. You know, essentially what they say is they do a word search through statutes, and they say, well, the word coordinate appears in the Endangered Species Act, and so therefore, if we're going to conserve land using federal money, we have to seek the permission of local government. And then they change the meaning of that word coordinate. And what coordinate means is that an individual county board member should have a veto authority over a popular conservation effort. So in this case, while we had thousands and thousands of individual Wisconsin residents speaking up in favor of the project, urging it to move forward, we have a handful of folks on the other side working with American Stewards of Liberty to try and create a sort of smokescreen of a fake legal idea to try and sabotage it.
Have there been courts that have upheld this coordination idea, or has it been universally rejected?
At least here in Wisconsin, it has been universally rejected. This came up during the Walker era, 2009, 2010. A number of Wisconsin towns tried to use this idea of coordination to say that they didn't have to do comprehensive land use planning. Even Scott Walker's attorney general wrote a lengthy legal opinion saying, essentially, this is made up. It's mumbo jumbo and it doesn't exist.
So when you were working with a number of groups and residents in the area to help garner support for the Pelican River Project, were you aware that the opposition was being funded by this Texas-based Stewards of American Liberty?
We were not. You know, as we were really working with supporters of the Pelican River Forest and helping folks organize to pass local resolutions to support the project or to get the word out, you know, we understood that there were a handful of county board members who were opposed to the project. State Senator Mary Felskowski had been outspoken in her opposition to the project. We then learned later on that our congressperson, Tom Tiffany, was involved. But it really wasn't until kind of the 11th hour that it turned up in some meeting minutes in a forestry committee up in Forest County that Congressman Tiffany had introduced some county board folks to the American Stewards of Liberty. Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not entirely sure about what the financial relationships are, what the ongoing relationship is. I know a number of local concerned citizens have filed, you know, records requests trying to dig to the bottom of this. You know, but it's certainly concerning to have a group from Texas coming here and telling us what Wisconsin residents should do with their own private land.
And you know, obviously the campaign in the Pelican River case, you know, to support the conservation was successful at the local level. You mentioned that there was some efforts in Congress by Congressman Tom Tiffany to try and block the federal funds. Those ultimately were unsuccessful. So just to be clear, the Pelican River conservation purchase is going forward, right?
The Pelican River conservation project is complete. That land is protected in perpetuity.
So knowing what you know now about, you know, some of these AstroTurf organizations like these American Stewards of Liberty, is that going to change the way you're going to approach these kinds of projects in the future? Are you going to be cognizant of that? Are there telltale signs that this opposition is being coordinated from, you know, one of these oil-funded, perhaps, groups, and will that change your strategy in terms of trying to garner local support?
I think one of the things that we're really concerned about is how groups like American Stewards of Liberty poison the conversation around what conservation efforts are, what our rights are, and what the impacts of land use decisions might be. So you have a group like American Stewards of Liberty, and just on its face, most of what they say is it's ridiculous, it's untrue, they're climate change deniers, but they worm their way into respected official conversations and platforms. So, for example, their executive director, Margaret Byfield, is going to be a keynote speaker at an industry convention in a couple of weeks, the Great Lakes Timber Professionals Association. That event is sponsored by the University of Wisconsin's Kemp Natural Resources Station. And so we have somebody who is an extremist, who touts lies, who now has a keynote platform at an event sponsored by, you know, Wisconsin's flagship university. And it's really concerning to have to, you know, try and address sort of those lies and misleading statements in a forum like that.
What are some of these misleading statements that American Stewards for Liberty have engaged in?
That carbon is good for the atmosphere. They recently, in a recent newsletter, they linked to a report denying climate change, denying the impacts of climate change, and saying that, you know, we should be pumping more carbon into the atmosphere. This is nuts to have as part of a platform at a forestry convention. They claim that the America the Beautiful initiative, which is all about promoting voluntary conservation efforts, is just a scheme to steal our property rights. So essentially what they do is they try and block an individual's ability to make a conservation-oriented decision about their land, and they claim that somehow that is protecting private property rights. And they really forward or promote extractive industries at the expense of sustainable land uses.
All right, we've been speaking with Gathering Waters Director of Strategic Initiatives, Charles Carlin. Thanks so much for joining us on the 8 o'clock buzz.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And we'll be back with University of Wisconsin Master of Fine Arts students coming up right after this. It's 8:48, and you're tuned to the 8 o'clock buzz on WORT. This is Brian Standing. The University of Wisconsin Master of Fine Arts, three University of Wisconsin Master of Fine Arts students are exploring personal relationships through distinct perspectives, media, and methods, including Vietnamese papermaking, Chinese knotting, and Jisung at the Ruth Davis Design Gallery at the UW School of Human Ecology. And the exhibits run through April 12th. We have three artists here with us right now. First joining us is Heather Kohlmeier, whose exhibit Inside Out is at the School of Human Ecology right now. Heather, welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me.
And also joining us is Veronica Y. Pham, who's got an exhibit called The Line Along the Knot, which is focusing on Vietnamese papermaking and Chinese knotting. Veronica, welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz.
Hi, Brian. It's wonderful to be here. I'm a huge fan of Ward, so this is a great pleasure.
Oh, well, it's excellent to have you here as well. And joining us by phone is Esther Cho, whose exhibit Tangible Secrets works with papermaking processes and Jisung, a Korean paper weaving technique. Esther, welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz.
Hi, so happy to be here.
All right. So, Esther, why don't we start with you? Can you explain to us what Jisung is and what your exhibit Tangible Secrets is doing with that technique?
Hi, yeah. So, Jisung is a Korean paper weaving technique. It's traditionally used by scrapping old mulberry books, and you would like cut those into thin strips, and then you would use your hands and kind of cord them together, and then using those cords you would weave them kind of like weaving baskets, and they would be used for like domestic purposes or making like other objects. I, however, am taking this traditional technique and I'm weaving secrets with them. So I'm interested in people's interior environments and the secrets and stories that people all hold. And
where did you collect these secrets?
So it started with, I just collected them in public restrooms. So how people write on the walls, I was interested in those, and I started thinking about how would these secrets look like if I responded to them in form and shape and color.
So the weavings, the things that you create with this paper weaving mm-hmm. technique are a representation of the things that people wrote on bathroom walls?
Correct. Yes.
Can you give us an example? What would that look like?
So, secrets range from, you know, very humorous and funny, usually in bars. And then some are very, like, deep and personal. And one of the secrets was, I hate my body. And then another secret was, when I retire, I want to be a nosy taxi driver. So there's a wide range of secrets, and depending on where I go to look for them or who writes them, the content is all different. But the connecting thing is that these are all human experiences, and that's what I wanted to bring into the gallery exhibition, and so we can find a place to connect.
So for the example, like I hate my body, how does that transform and how do you represent that in the weaving that you produce?
Yeah, so I am very limited with my current, like, so I'm not very fluent in traditional, like basketry, and this technique is also very new to me, so it's a way of me exploring as well. But I start out with drawings in the beginning, and I start drawing, like, okay, when I think of body, what forms do I think of? How do I think of, like, how do I represent this with color and, like, multiple colors of bodies, like people's bodies and skin tones, or what kind of insecurities do I have that I can relate to the secret, which might not have been from the giver, but I think of it in like kind of like through my lens. And I start with drawings, and then that drawing becomes like a vessel, like a basket.
All right. Heather Kohlmeier, you have an exhibit entitled Inside Out. Why did you pick that title?
All right. Why did I pick that title? Well, I have spent a lot my earlier years working in healthcare. I was a massage therapist for 10 years and have a degree in clinical laboratory science, so I spent a lot of time with the body and looking through microscopes, and so that has found its way into my work. I'm always sort of approaching material and making from a place of how my body feels about it. And so as I was making the work, I realized I was making things that were represented the interior world of the body and the external world of the body, and so it seemed appropriate.
So how did you move from massage therapy and this sort of health-oriented environment to an artistic expression using handmade and hand-dyed paper?
Well, I think I was always interested in making, and when I went on to pursue further education, I decided I needed to do something practical, and I was interested in the health. And I think that was because I connect well with people, I'm sensitive, and I really enjoy using my hands. And so I went back to school and ended up getting a BFA, and I saw that there was a real relationship between, again, body, using my hands, and connecting. And I could do that with people, and I can do that with material. And I became fascinated with paper. It has a lot of, it shares a lot of similarities with the body, and that it's made out of a cellulosic material. You need a lot of paper. Our bodies are made out of cellulosic materials, and we require a lot of water. I said paper, I meant require a lot of water.
So from moving from working with muscle tissue to paper tissue.
Yeah. Right? Ultimately,
it's almost a similar construction in a way, isn't it?
It is a similar construction in that we're sort of woven together, and so is the paper. And I find that this practice, this art of working with paper, is very it really requires some muscle memory, like so many things that we learn how to do. And so there's this sort of dance that happens.
Veronica Y. Pham, you have a exhibit called The Line Along the Knot, and you're using a number of techniques here, including Vietnamese papermaking and Chinese knotting. Tell us about that technique. I mean, what? How did you get exposed to those techniques, and why did you decide to use them in this particular exhibit?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So I'm using Vietnamese papermaking and Chinese knotting as a way to kind of think about my own heritage. My mom is from China, and my dad was a refugee from Vietnam. And these two techniques have really been a way for me to think about the knowledge that's inherently in our hands and that's been passed down through time. And so Vietnamese papermaking and Chinese knotting, both of those craft forms have slowly been disappearing, but also because of paper and fiber disintegrating over time so quickly, there's not a lot of artifacts that kind of hold this material in place. And so when I was in Vietnam in 2022, in the summer of 2022, I was able to learn from master papermakers in Vietnam. And this was my first time in Vietnam. I had spent a number of times in China before visiting family. And I just felt like this profound connection with the craft. I got involved in papermaking because I was always questioning my materials, but then I found myself questioning, what is the state of Vietnamese papermaking? And so when I had this amazing opportunity to go to Vietnam, I was able to study with master papermakers and kind of learn about the state of the craft and how it's been a vehicle to transfer stories and carry stories forward. And also that it's so embedded in Vietnamese culture. It's used for spiritual rituals too, for paper burning, but it's also a medium to put prints on for woodblock printing. And it's just a very special craft form. And then with Vietnamese knotting, this was kind of something that I learned just this past year, is that before written language, Chinese knotting was a form to carry language and transfer language to different communities. And so I just found that these two different craft forms kind of talk about my heritage, but then also is a way for me to explore that type of craft and that type of making.
So had the three of you met before you put this joint exhibit together? Did you meet as a part of that process? Heather, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, so we're actually, we're peers in the Design Studies MFA program. And so we're a cohort, and we have worked together for Veronica and I the past 3 years. Esther joined us 2 years ago. So we've all been working together.
And do you work collaboratively? I mean, do you bounce ideas off of each other, Veronica?
Oh, all the time. It's yeah, we're so close-knit. I mean, I don't know what I would do without these two. So we definitely bounce ideas off of each other, and we're just doing life together, which is so special to be 3 years making closely with someone. Yeah.
And Esther, what are your ambitions, and do you anticipate working together with Heather and Veronica again in the future?
Of course. of course. And I think that we all synergize very well with one another, and we also bounce off ideas but also give really great feedback. And so I don't know how I can go forward without these two.
All right. We've been speaking with artists Heather Kohlmeyer, Veronica Y. Pham, and Esther Cho. The combined exhibits are on exhibit at the Ruth Davis Design Gallery at the University of Wisconsin School of Human Ecology through April 12th. And you can find out more at by looking for the School of Ecology and the Ruth Davis Design Gallery on the web. Thank you all for joining us, Esther, Heather, and Veronica.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And that wraps up our program for today. I'd like to thank all of our guests, new Operation Fresh Start Executive Director Brian McMahon, Charles Carlin of Gathering Waters, textile artists Heather Kohlmeyer, Esther Cho, and Veronica Y. Pham. Thanks to our engineer, Charlie Pittman, who piloted the new, improved, mighty WORT soundboard. And this was the premier voyage of that piece of equipment. And no catastrophes in this show. So, all right, way to go. Thanks to our receptionist, Lori Ranney. And this is WORT 89.9 FM Madison. We're live streaming and podcasting at WORTFM.org. Thanks also to our producer, Nicholas Wooten. My name is Brian Standing. Global Revolutions is coming up next, right after the Insurgent Radio Kiosk.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Monday, April 1st.
MedMen here for Action Weirdos Productions. This week in music history for April Fool's Day. On April 1st, 1991, School of Fish released their debut self-titled album. If Phil Spector invented the wall of sound, School of Fish create a landscape of sound. It's not overwhelming, it just fills in the background with a rich tone. It's almost like ambient rock. The guitars have a jangly crunch and there's plenty of melody in the lead, but it almost gets lost in the hypnotic rhythm. Here's Three Strange Days. Many of the songs just make observations of the world instead of identifying problems. The agenda is to relax and enjoy the ride. Not to say that it's boring ambient elevator filler. It's guitar-driven and melodic, but it just kind of meanders around at a slower pace and gives off the vibe that things are kind of screwed up, but it's all going to be okay. It feels like anti-punk. Everything looks good. If you don't, you twist it right. School of Fish only released two albums, and this one is full of mellow, philosophical, guitar-driven songs.